Hi guys, good morning, afternoon, evening, night, wherever you're listening to this week's episode, and welcome back to Teachable Psych. My name is Sarah Jang, your host, and this week I had the wonderful opportunity to speak with Professor Nakula, and I hope you guys really enjoy this episode, and I'll see you at the end. Hey, so my name's Sarah. I'm a junior at North Cup High School, so I live in Atlanta, Georgia.
In Georgia, okay.
Yeah. And so last year, when I had a college counselor, they were saying how, like, you need a passion project to stand out when you're applying to college. So I've always been interested in psychology, and I used to want to be a teacher. And previously before that, I actually went to my old school and volunteered, and I was a substitute teacher. And then I realized how draining it was, and I was like, I can't be a teacher for the rest of my life. But I still was still being around children and interacting with them. So, like, I should do something with education and psychology. And I knew I wasn't going to, like, post YouTube videos or make a blog. So I was like, a podcast would be perfect because I like interacting with people. But I don't want to necessarily, like, post a video of me, like, my face on the public. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's almost about to be a year since I created my podcast.
Fantastic. Good for you.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. Mm. So you can... I'll let you lead the way however you want to handle our discussion today. I'm happy to follow along and provide what I can.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so whenever you're ready, can you begin by introducing yourself?
Sure. So my full name is Michael Nakula. So the last name is N-A-K-K-U-L-A. And that's, people often ask me what background that is, and that's actually Finnish, from Finland. So my ancestors are from Finland. So that's my name. I work at the University of Pennsylvania at the Graduate School of Education, where I oversee our counseling and human development programs primarily. So those programs both work at the intersection of psychology and education. So my professional training background is as a counseling psychologist, which is very much like a clinical psychologist. And both of those types of psychologists work with counseling and psychotherapy to help people, you know, make progress in their lives or overcome difficult situations. And some of that work is done in schools. So there's, there are strong connections to education in that way.
Yeah. So this is a very broad question, but how do you think education and psychology are related to each other?
Well, you know, I think that's a question I've thought a lot about, and I think it's a great one. They're both about human development in some way, right? Education is about the development of learning, the development of the mind, learning how to interact with other people, as well as learning educational content like math and reading and history. So I think the goal, the fundamental goal of education is to promote the development of the learner so the learner can make decisions about where to go with life and career decisions. And psychology is very much the same way. Psychology, the research and practice sides of psychology. So the research side is, I'm not sure if you hear that reverberation.
It's fine.
Is it okay, Sarah?
Yeah.
Okay. So the research side of psychology focuses on studying how people learn and how they develop and studying how they work through mental health challenges, for example, you know, or other difficulties in life. And the practice side of psychology is helping people work through those difficulties. And depending on the field of psychology, psychologists might focus on mental health issues primarily, but they can also focus on life decision making, career development, helping organizations become more functional by being better people organizations. So I think there are all sorts of ways in which psychology and education are related to each other.
So what do you think is, like, the number one problem for teachers working with students, such as retaining their attention span?
Building motivation, I would say is probably the number one challenge. And that takes many forms. So you could ask, what motivates a student to stay engaged in school and to learn? So some of the things include being interested in the content. You know, that could be motivating. If students have built good skills prior to their current stage of learning, they tend to be more motivated to take on the learning challenges of the present. If they've fallen behind in the past, it's hard to stay motivated in the present. So teachers are faced with the challenge of enhancing the motivation of their students so that they can best learn the content that they're teaching. And, you know, part of that motivational process, I think one of the most important parts for teachers is relationship building with students. How do I build a trusted, supportive, motivating relationship with my students so they want to engage in my class? And that's easier said than done. You know, teachers might even know how to do it, but still not act on that knowledge all the time because they're so busy. And they're under pressure to make sure they teach the content of their course as well, while also building relationships with their students.
Yeah. So what caused you to choose this field of study?
I think primarily caring about people. You know, I myself come from a lower socioeconomic background where neither of my parents graduated from high school. So my trajectory was a lot different from most of the people around me, including my three younger siblings. They didn't go on to college or complete a college degree. So I often ask myself, why were things so different for me? You know, what allowed me to do the things that I've done educationally and professionally? And you know, when I look at that question and try to answer it, I see lots of the struggles that people experienced around me. And I wanted to do something to help with those struggles, you know, for the next generation or for other people I come into contact with. So becoming a therapist seemed like a very direct way to help other people with their life struggles. And that's why I went into it in the first place.
Do you think you would have been a different professor if you didn't major in psychology?
Oh, I'm sure I would have been. Because psychology teaches you to be attuned to other people and their cares and concerns. So if I have a struggling student, I don't see it as a problem per se. I see it as something that I need to take on as a professor to help them get what they want out of my class and out of their education. So I tend to see student problems more as important life challenges as opposed to something that you judge negatively, for example. And I think that orientation really comes through the training in psychology.
So like most undergrad students, they're already like required to take a psychology class. How do you think that benefits them?
Really depends on the class. Psychology, like any topic, can be very boring if it's taught in a particular way. You know, if students are just exposed to a bunch of different theories of psychology and what psychology is about, but if that course doesn't engage the student in really thinking about themselves and thinking about other people and really, really deepening the understanding that one has of others and of oneself, then the class might not be that helpful. So I think taking a psychology class in and of itself isn't enough. It has to be the kind of class that really orients you toward understanding people's concerns, as opposed to just learning a host of theories.
So after learning about psychology, do you think it gave you like a different perspective on the people surrounding you?
Definitely. It helped me understand that everybody's struggles are there for a particular for many reasons, and that no one chooses to struggle, you know, but that we struggle because of the lives we've lived, you know, the things we experience, the contexts we're in, troubles our parents might have or other, you know, elders in our environments. It might even be a biological predisposition toward depression or anxiety. But the point is that no one chooses to feel bad. And I truly believe no one chooses initially to act badly. But some people engage in a lot of negative behavior for various reasons, including being socialized into it, or having earlier life trauma, or not having enough support. But there are always reasons why people feel and behave as they do. And so I think that perspective on human being comes from my study of psychology.
Do you think it gave you a different perspective on yourself?
Yeah, in many ways. An appreciation for why I have struggled in some ways over the course of my life, and recognizing that that's being human, that it's not a necessarily a deep flaw, but something to work on. And it also, you know, has allowed me to understand the benefits I had in coming from a large family that didn't have a lot of money, but where there was a lot of love and support and affection. So it allowed me to take my parents and my surroundings less for granted than I might have otherwise. You know, realizing that my accomplishments aren't all my own. They also have arisen through a lot of support I got from other people in my life.
So earlier you stated that your counseling psychology was similar to clinical. Can you explain how?
Yeah, clinical psychology classically deals with more serious, what people call pathology, or deeper mental health problems, and focuses on treatment of those problems, or the study of how those problems came to be in the first place, and how we can treat them. Counseling psychology classically focuses more on the promotion of mental well-being. So instead of focusing on the most serious psychological problems, it focuses a little more on how we can counsel people to live their best lives or live satisfying lives. So it's a bit more health-oriented. I often tell my students, clinical psychology sort of sits between psychiatry, which is a medical degree, where there's primarily prescription of medication for psychoses and serious problems. Clinical psychology sits between that and counseling psychology or public health, even, where there's a focus on health. Counseling psychology sits between clinical psychology and education. So counseling psychologists really use educational approaches even to help people understand the things they're going through and, you know, ways of enhancing their well-being.
So have you done counseling yourself?
Yeah, lots of it over the years.
So how was
I did?
Sorry.
I'll give you just a little example of where I focused primarily. My earliest counseling experiences were in New York, in Brooklyn, where I focused on addictions. I was an addiction counselor for people struggling with alcoholism primarily and other types of drug addiction. And then I moved toward counseling high school students and middle school students and families during my doctoral work. I was fortunate to get my doctorate at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. So I did my training through clinics connected with Harvard and started focusing more on adolescents at that point, or high school students and middle school students, because I wanted to help them avoid some of the problems I saw when I was an addiction counselor. You know, so thinking about prevention in a certain way, what could help young people reduce the likelihood they become addicted to something or really develop further negative, you know, troubling mental health concerns.
So since you worked with multiple age groups, which one would you say is something you prefer to work with, and how do they differ?
Well, I don't know if I have an age group I like working with more or less than any other, but I've placed most of the focus in my career on the high school age range, middle school and high school, actually, because if middle school students don't transition well enough into high school, their prospects for the future really get dimmed. You know, if you go into high school unmotivated and unprepared to learn, it's very hard to go beyond high school in any area that requires advanced professional training, especially academic training. You could still become a tradesperson, you know, without a good high school education, but your options are reduced. And I focus on the high school age because the next step beyond high school is very determinative of where one goes in life, whether you go to college or a trade school or straight to work or don't get a job. You know, those all have implications for what comes next. I'm also really interested in the middle and high school age group for identity purposes. There's a part of psychology called identity development, or how people see themselves. And I'm interested in that because the way people see themselves is going to influence what they believe they can do in life. So if people feel bad about themselves for different reasons, or feel alienated, you know, as an outsider, it makes it hard to function to the best of your ability. If you end up feeling good about yourself for different reasons, it makes it easier to function well moving forward. So that middle school age range and the high school age range are the two I have focused on most and really like working with.
So what advice would you give to someone that wants to major in psychology and continue that as their career?
I would say when you focus on your high school coursework, think about the meaning of it for people and don't just go through the motions, but really try to, whether it's in psychology or biology or literature, whatever it is you're studying in high school, study it with an understanding that this relates to people's lives. It's not just something you have to get through, but you know, how does biology affect me? How does biology affect other people? How do different aspects of science affect the way people live? So I think being serious and concerned about the human condition is the foundation for psychology. And then if one goes on to college, there are different ways of getting into psychology. You don't have to be a psychology major from the beginning. You could focus on journalism or literature or almost anything. But if you take some psychology classes along the way, it will help you get prepared for graduate school. And the reality is you can't become a psychologist without going to graduate school. So it requires 4 years of undergraduate, getting a bachelor's degree, then probably a master's degree in some form of psychology. And that could be counseling psychology, developmental psychology, educational psychology. They're all different branches that one can focus on at the master's level. And then you start thinking about doctoral work after that, if you want to be get licensed as a clinical or counseling psychologist, you have to go on for a PhD or what's called the PsyD, Doctor of Psychology. So it's a long road, but the reality is that you're doing interesting things all along the way. So even though it's a long road, it's a gratifying one, but it's important not to think too much about how long that is, but really to be more interested in the coursework as you go.
So if someone were to be like, want to go into psychology for the career, but they don't know like what specific study they want to go into, how would you figure that out?
Through different classes you take at the undergraduate level. So the reality is most people enter college with a certain idea of what they want to do in psychology or another area, but they only become clearer over time through experience. So, as an undergrad, you take courses. So I would take a range of psychology courses if that was my interest, and also try to get involved in internships or hands-on experience as much as possible. Those are really, they really help you figure out if that's the kind of thing you'd want to do. So, you know, some college students get involved in professors' research projects as well, and they learn about the study of psychology that way. So I would say two things, hands-on experience and taking a wide range of courses. And if you find a professor you really like, try to take more than one course with that professor, and because they can be helpful in, you know, in helping guide students toward different areas within the field.
Okay, so how would you describe your experience into going into psychology and getting to where you are now?
Well, it's a really great question because my My career trajectory is a little unusual. I went to Michigan State University, a big state school, as an undergraduate. I grew up in Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, a very rural area. And I went to Michigan State as a journalism major, but I shifted to psychology later in my undergraduate career because I realized I was more interested in understanding people and working with them than I was in writing about people. So I then got a master's. So I had many experiences as an undergrad working in residential treatment centers with developmentally delayed adults, for example, with handicaps or with youth who were struggling with different issues. And there are jobs like that at the undergrad level. So I got involved in, I had different kinds of part-time jobs that informed my interest in psychology. Then I went on for a master's degree in counseling at the University of Minnesota. And there I became really convinced that I wanted to get a doctorate. And that's when I started working with youth. I started working with high school students during my master's degree. And from there, I went to New York and became an addiction counselor. And that work really got me interested in going back to working with high school students to help prevent these challenges that young people faced who were living with addiction. So I went on, I applied for doctoral programs then in counseling and clinical psychology, and was fortunate to get into some good programs, including Harvard. So I went on for my doctorate at Harvard in counseling psychology, and then was fortunate enough to be hired there after I graduated. So I taught at Harvard for 16 years and helped create a couple of psychology programs there. One was called Risk and Prevention, which focused on the study of risk factors that people face, risks like poverty, abuse, even early addiction or early substance use, and how that can lead to problems later. And after doing that work for many years and in writing a couple of books on psychology while I was doing that, the University of Pennsylvania recruited me to help develop their counseling programs at the master's level. And so after going there, I became the chair of the department I'm in, kind of overseeing the human development and counseling programs. So all along the way, the core theme was getting good experiences and reading deeply. I read things that I cared about very deeply. So I built my knowledge base through a lot of my own efforts, as well as what I learned in classes. But one thing I would say from my own experience is no one should underassume what they're capable of, because I was not a great student as an undergrad. I was an average student, you know. And I just, as I became more interested in psychology, I put more energy into it. As I put more energy into it, more opportunities kept coming up. So if you can really deepen your interest in something and follow it, incredible things can happen.
You focus on urban education, correct? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How would you say that differentiates from rural communities and education, those areas?
Now, that's a really great question too. One of the reasons I've focused on urban education is I started doing that work in Brooklyn as an addiction counselor. That's a very urban area. And I became very familiar with the risks associated with condensed poverty in urban environments. So I came to know so many people living in those environments that it really increased my attention. So when I went to Harvard, I worked with the Boston Public Schools to develop a couple of programs in the high schools and middle schools that made it clearer to help students see more clearly what they might be able to do with a college degree and with their interests. Just like this interview for someone your age, I would want to do what we're talking about now, help people see what's possible and then support their development around that. One of the reasons I'm so interested in urban education, well, two reasons: the racial diversity in urban areas. You're working with people from all different backgrounds. Lots of students of color and white students from lower income backgrounds. So that's important to me. I think our society needs to embrace the broad diversity of the people we are. And also, large urban school districts often don't have the resources to support their solid. So high school students from rural areas often don't know what's out there either. You know, they have too limited exposure to the real opportunities in the job market. So there's similarities in opportunity awareness. One of the differences is that students in rural areas, if their school districts are functioning well enough, have a better chance of getting support strictly because there are fewer of them. You know, you have fewer students per adult in most cases.
Okay, so I don't know what happened, but I didn't hear what you said in the beginning. So could you possibly repeat what you said?
Should the beginning about why focus on urban? Why do I focus on urban education? Yeah, I said two primary reasons. I'm not sure which of this you heard, Sarah, but the diversity of the people in urban areas. So you're really exposed to a range of students from different racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic backgrounds. It's just the nature of urban areas in general. They draw a diversity of people. So that's very important to me. And the second reason is large urban schools and school districts are often under-resourced. So students don't have access to some of the opportunities you would have in a suburban area, for example, because schools are overcrowded and there's not enough money. So too many students in urban areas never have an opportunity to find out what they're really capable of and what's out there in the world that matches with their interests. So I would say that's the primary reason I focused on urban areas.
So during COVID, many people, they're like mental health plummeted, but in like many third world countries or underdeveloped countries, there's not a lot of therapy provided, or it's too expensive for them, or it's also frowned upon to like have a mental health. So
that's right.
What would be a way for us to like provide resources and help those in need?
Another great question. So one of the ways that we deal with the stigma around getting mental health support is changing the language a little bit. So I focus on something I call possibility development, which is a way to help to talk with people about the possibilities in their lives they might want to pursue and explore possibilities they're not aware of yet, including possibilities for feeling better emotionally. You know, if they're struggling with depression or anxiety or something to that effect, we look at how those issues can get in the way of pursuing things that people really care about. So I started something at Penn called the Global Possibility Network. And we work with people from all over the world in sharing ideas about how to build resources to support young people's development. So we have examples from China, from Vietnam, Turkey, parts of Africa, Latin America. And we look at what people are doing to support young folks in these environments and how we can expand those resources. So right now we have more questions than answers, but our belief is that by putting our heads together, we'll be able to build coalitions that really create more resources for mental health and what we call mental health and optimal development.
So how did you start so many organizations, especially in colleges?
I think over time, it just experience over time. I never thought that way when I was young. This isn't something I planned to do. It's something that happened. So my initial intent was to become a therapist, you know, a counselor or a therapist to help people with their problems. But as I did that work more continuously, I saw other ways of promoting mental health and optimal development. But, you know, so one of them was as a graduate student, I got involved in professors' work. I helped my professors with their work. And that opened up ways for me to understand how you get grant money and the power to start things and do different things. So I began, I would say, as an apprentice to professors doing this. Then I learned from them and moved on to do it on my own with colleagues and others who had similar interests.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the interview, Sarah. Good. Where are you going to take all of this work? What are you going to do with it?
Well, I posted it on Spotify and then also on Anchor. And I'm hoping okay. to like also do it to other platforms. But yeah, it's just for the public. And then obviously I can talk about it in my college applications.
Fantastic. Well, let me know if I can help in any way. I'd be happy to put in a good word for you with your college applications.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Wonderful rest of your Christmas or winter break. And yeah, see you guys next year.